Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5, 34 minutes after the hour on this Friday morning. We do appreciate you listening. Still to come on the program, State Representative Rex Reynolds, former police chief at Huntsville. We'll talk about policing and everything in the wake of the Derek Chauvin verdict. It's really how it pertains to what's going on here in Alabama. Also on the program today, as we do every Friday, we'll talk to April Marie Fogle from Alabama Today, and we'll wrap it up with State Senator Chris Elliott. So please make sure that you stick around for that. But joining us now, always glad he could take time to speak to this audience down here in South Alabama, Congressman Robert Aderholt from the 4th Congressional District. Good morning, Congressman. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well, Jeff. It's good to hear from you and good to be home.
Well, yes, as I said, thanks for making time for us. I guess, first off, D.C. statehood is it seems to be the big topic. Obviously, getting through the House, it seems like it's DOA in the Senate, but I don't know. Watching what's going on in your chamber there with Nancy Pelosi, it still seems like they're in messaging bill mode, passing a lot of things, getting them out the door and sending them to the Senate that maybe have a slim to no chance of becoming a law.
Well, we saw this in the last Congress. Last year, the House, when the Democrats were in control, they passed the same bill, basically the same bill that for D.C. statehood. And as we saw, it didn't go anywhere in the Senate. And, of course, I think that's the same thing. I think this boils down to Eleanor Holmes Norton is the representative from the District of Columbia. And this is her one main issue, is making D.C. a state. And, you do have a lot of folks on the Democrat side that would love to see two more Democrat senators in the U.S. Senate, which would happen if you got D.C. statehood, and, of course, another voting member in the House of Representatives if D.C. gets statehood. And so she knows that this is something that they're very interested in. But I think she, at the end of the day, understands that it's got an uphill battle, as you referred to, in the Senate. I would be, shocked if it goes anywhere in the Senate, because you do have folks like Manchin and other senators that he's from West Virginia, so that he's nearby. He is, I don't think his constituent wants to see D.C. As another state. So, I think it's going nowhere, but the message is out there. She is able to tell her base that she is moving on these. And, I think that's the bottom line.
Well, and they keep passing these bills like that, and they don't go anywhere. I don't know. What do you think? It's hard. I know it's hard for you to read their mind or know what's going on there. But does it seem like there's any prospect? I know we talked a lot about the election, how important it was to keep Democrats out because they were going to make Puerto Rico and D.C. a state and into the filibuster, and it was going to be Democrat majorities for years. But I guess no one was really anticipating, maybe, or maybe some people were, but really didn't talk about it, the log jam. The Senate wasn't going to take up all of this with a 50-50 split and the vice president being Kamala Harris. But the House, on the other hand, is still just passing everything like it's, you're heading into that election. You want to gin up your voters. Does that seem to be accurate? Is that, am I reading this correctly?
No, it's you're exactly right. That's exactly what is happening. But again, you got to remember that almost all of these bills, you saw them pass in the last Congress when the Democrats were in control. Of course, the only thing different now is the Republicans were in control and you had Trump in the White House. You do have Biden that would probably sign all these bills. However, the difference is that the Senate has that 60 vote margin, threshold vote that they have traditionally gone by. I'm thankful the Democrats have not changed that. They could have changed that, but I think they realized that, they may have that now, but in 2 years or next year after the next election or whatever, then that would come back to haunt them tremendously. And so they know that that's going to be what would be if the Democrats do that and the Republicans would do it. And so they're just, I think they realize that they've got to be very cautious about moving forward on getting rid of the filibuster. So the 60-vote margin is what's keeping these bills from being signed into law is the bottom line.
Well, and I keep waiting for this here to happen, that we're heading, it's a long way away, but we're in this perpetual election cycle, it seems, our election season. And the turn toward 2022, where you have some members that are maybe more moderate. They were from districts that Trump won in 2016. They're going to say, hey, we got to knock this off and start having something to show for Democratic leadership in the House, or we're going to lose. And, you know, historically they do lose, but we're going to lose our elections. You're putting us in a tough spot bind here and have sort of a revolt, but we haven't really gotten to that point, so it seems, yet.
The Republicans have stayed together. I think they because the Republicans realize that really what the Nancy Pelosi is really playing to the base Democrat votes, and that's who is really behind all this. So I think we as Republicans understand that. Even our more moderate Republicans understand that, and understand that if we were to start capitulating, then our base would be deflated and saying, they stood strong, why can't you stand strong?
Congressman, looking at some of the other things you're talking about, we're talking about all these outlandish kind of things that the Democrats are doing, the infrastructure bill. Is there any reason, from your perspective, to be, even hopeful that this would benefit Alabama in some way? But it looks like a lot of, kind of green technology stuff. And then they talk about human infrastructure, like childcare and expansion of Medicaid, things of that sort. But it's not really roads and bridges. But maybe there's something in there that could benefit the state of Alabama.
Well, I think it would be very limited you're talking about, I assume you're talking about the bill that Biden has proposed.
Right.
Or the proposal. And bear in mind, Jeff, and I think this is really an important aspect, and it really dawned on me the other day. I was in one of our Republican conference meetings, and it was reiterated. There is no Biden bill out there per se. There's just proposals out there for particular bills or a infrastructure bill. They've talked about it in, in numbers of trillions of dollars and different aspect. There's no bill out there per se. So I think that is a good sign. It's a good signal that they don't have the votes, because they've not even introduced a bill. They're just talking in proposals at this point. So I think until you see a bill, they're not even close to having the votes to get it, because it is so limited. It does so many other things than focus on infrastructure. I think an infrastructure bill could be could be very positive for this country, because we do need to maintain our bridges. We need to maintain our roads. We want to have good roads to drive on. The interstate system is a tremendous asset for this country. We've got to maintain it, and we do maintain it, but there's some things that could be added on. The interstate system was started back in the 1950s, and there's areas that need to be improved. Up in my area, up in Northwest Alabama, we were able to get Quarter X finished over the last 10 years. And of course, it's been going on for much longer, but it was completed within the last 10 years. And it has made a tremendous impact upon travel in Northwest Alabama, because there was no four lane between Memphis and Birmingham. It was still, part of the way was a two lane road. And those are two major cities in the South, Birmingham and Memphis. It's in the last 10 years that we had a two-lane road that we're connected to.
And you mentioned Corridor X. It seemed like it took like 50 years for that to get done, because you just had to, like you say, drive up the old U.S. 78 there, a little two-lane road at mm-hmm. times. But, we don't build these interstate highways like we used to. At one time, it would take 10, 15 years. Now, like, it seems like it takes 20, 30, 40 years. So when we talk about infrastructure, when we actually, if we ever do actually pass a big federal infrastructure program, it may not even be in our lifetimes that we see what comes out of that. I mean, do we ever get back to a time when we were more, maybe it's these environmental concerns that hold a lot of this up. Do we ever get back to a time when we could be where we could build an interstate highway a lot faster like we used to?
Well, I think we could if the American people put enough pressure on Congress to do it. But right now, with the environmental lobbyists the way they are, you know, that's one of the things that holds up a lot of these contracts, because they have to do studies upon various different areas that they're looking to put highways and expand highways, and you know, they're just all, you know, just numerous things that has to be done. Of course, that did not happen back in the 50s and 60s when you had that sort of interstate system. I don't think you could build interstate system as we know it today. Or if you did, it would take 100 years to build what it took them in 20 or 30 years back in the 1950s. And so, you know, we could get to that, but with the environmental lobbyists the way it is, and just, you know, and obviously I want to protect the environment. We all do. But, you know, there's some things that common sense has not even come into play in some of these aspects in this green deal, Green New Deal, that I think a lot of people want to implement, a lot of the Democrats want to implement within a infrastructure bill. And it would just be, take even longer. So, to answer your question, we could, but I don't see that in the near future, because I just don't think that I think the lobbying is too strong for the environmental component of this to allow us to move in an expeditious manner.
Well, and maybe it's this as well. I mean, you represent a largely rural congressional district that a lot of the membership in your body and a lot of the bureaucracy in Washington, D.C., almost this bubble mentality where they have a metro, they have a functioning public transit system, you know, where they can move people around, and they think of roads and bridges and interstate highways as to be, that's the old way of doing things. Why not just hop on a light rail somewhere? But you can't really do that in most of America. And I think that kind of naivety is guiding a lot of our transportation policy in 2021.
It is, and also you do have a lot of money that now a lot of people want to put into bike trails and different things like that. Again, I think there's room for that, but I don't think we can do it at the expense of our bridges and highways, because obviously, you know, that's what really connects our country is these interstate highways, and we have, you know, bridges are very expensive and they're very massive, that is something that, unfortunately, there's a lot of other competing projects that go for this money now, and they've opened it up to so many things that we can't focus on the highways. But I will say this, one thing that I have been very impressed with when coming to Congress, and when I say impressed with, is impressed upon me, is that there are a lot of members from rural America. We always think of, I think, sometimes the large cities, but, you know, also there's a lot of members from rural America out there that understands the importance of highways and they know that there's high-speed rail that's not available everywhere. And so, thankfully, they're there, and even if they may be from Wisconsin, they may be from even parts of New York, that because all of New York is not New York City. And there's a large rural part of even New York. So, thankfully, the way the Founding Fathers set it up, you know, there's not rural America is represented in Congress, and I think they always will be.
Joined by Congressman Robert Atterholt of the 4th Congressional District here in Alabama. Congressman, court packing, a lot of discussion about that, and this seems to be another one of these messaging bills, but it's getting a lot of attention. This seems like this is something to me that goes nowhere, but do you think that maybe what's going on here is a kind of a way to try to influence or send a chilling effect through the court by saying, hey, if you start, you know, hey, right of center court or whatever you want to call it, if you start getting too aggressive here, Congress will come in and add a few more colleagues for you, justices here. I mean, that's maybe what seems to me like what's going on. But a serious guy, well, not depends on what the definition of serious is, with Jerry Nadler, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, out there pushing this idea.
Yeah, no, I think there could be that aspect of it, but I think a lot of it is not only is it threatening, but some of them would actually like to do it, would like to, because they see right now with the conservatives, you know, holding a majority on the court, and then, of course, you've got other justices on the court that Democrat justices that were appointed by Democrat presidents that could retire, and that would even further the conservative position of the court, that they're thinking long term that maybe we need to do something to try to circumvent this. And so I don't think it's only to send a message, but I think a lot of them would like to do it. Now, whether it can be done, I don't think there's an appetite for it in this country. I think that you've got to have the American people that's really behind. This is just, I think, some partisan folks that would like to see this, but I don't think the American people thinks it's necessarily a good idea. It served us well for 9 justices on the Supreme Court, it has worked well. You know, we've not always, everybody always agrees with the way the Supreme Court rules on everything, myself included. But at the end of the day, you know, it has been overall a good system. And I think trying to make a political, and of course it is somewhat political. Anybody that says the Supreme Court's not political is, I don't think, really seeing the reality, but we don't want it to be overtly political. And I think if you start packing the court, then you will get us, that will be a way that it's becoming just another political institution. Congress is really to be more political than the president, because we elect those people to based on our philosophy. We want the Supreme Court to interpret the Constitution as opposed to looking at it from a political angle.
Congressman, we're out of time. We got to leave it there, but thank you for coming on this morning. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, it's always good to be with you, Jeff, and it's always good to, I know, I hope things are getting back to normal now down in the southern part of the state, especially with the beaches and COVID hopefully subsiding and things opening up. And I was down that way, down your way 2 or 3 weeks ago. And of course, the beaches are as beautiful as always. And so I hope that everything is well down in the southern part of our state.
Well, we appreciate you paying us a visit down here, and hopefully you make it back down here soon. But as always, thanks for coming on.
You're more than welcome. We'll be in touch.
All right. That was Congressman Robert Adderholt. Let's get a break in here. This is FM Talk 106.5. Montgomery at midnight.